Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are the peacemakers, they will be called the children of God. Well, most Christians will remember those phrases and the others spoken by Jesus in his Sermon on the Mount, commonly known as the Mount of the Beatitudes. In his sermon, Jesus outlines the kind of people who are favored by God and who will one day inherit his heavenly kingdom. Matthew and Luke both recount the Beatitudes in a similar fashion, with a few differences. But most scholars agree Jesus was trying to overturn the common assumption that worldly power and wealth offer people the best security and hope. Some theologians have indicated that in his Sermon on the Mount, Christ was further elaborating on the Ten Commandments that Moses received on Mount Sinai. The Mount of the Beatitudes is generally believed to be located in Galilee, a hill called Karn Hatin, for the two horns which crown its summit. It is not far from Nazareth, Cana, and Mount Tabor. And today, pilgrims will find a 20th century Catholic chapel called the Church of the Beatitudes marking the site. Well, as part of our series of Lenten reflections on Christian sites in the Holy Land, scholar and author Father Peter Stravinskas takes us up the Mount of the Beatitudes for Jesus' Sermon on the Mount.
We have in St. Matthew's Gospel chapters 5 to 7, which contain the so-called Sermon on the Mount. Essentially, the same text is found in Luke's Gospel, and Luke has it as the Sermon on the Plain. I remember talking to some grammar school children years ago, and one little kid said, "What kind of a plain did Jesus have?" And sometimes people get hung up on really inconsequential things. Well, was it a mountain or was it a plain? Well, as a matter of fact, we could say perhaps it was a mountain and a plain. The same sermon could have been given more than once. I know I've delivered the same sermon more than once, and amazingly enough, sometimes in the same congregation, and they don't even remember it, which says probably more about me than it does about them. But also, some of the church fathers noted that very often in a mountainous setting, there are levels where, as a matter of fact, there's a halfway point, and one could have done it on that level spot. So yes, it was indeed a mountain and a plain at the same time. But the point of the matter is the content of that sermon. And it's important to catch something. Matthew, of course, is a Jew writing for Jews. And the first thing he tells us is that Jesus sits down to teach. Well, what's the purpose of that? Not that he was tired, but sitting is the posture of the rabbi to teach authoritatively. And he sits in his chair, from which, of course, we get our word, both in Greek and in Latin, the cathedra, the chair of teaching authority. That becomes the word, of course, the basis for our cathedral, the church, the mother church of a diocese, where there is the chair of the bishop who teaches authoritatively. So from the very first verse of that section, there's a light that goes on, at least to a Jewish audience. Oh, we better pay attention. This is something that is incredibly important. This is an authoritative teaching that's going to take place. And what Matthew does throughout the Gospel, but particularly in the Sermon on the Mount, he presents a series of fulfillments so that Jesus is the new Moses, the Gospel is the new law, and the Church is the new Israel. That doesn't abolish or take away any of the significance of those past things, whether Moses, law, or Israel, but it brings them to total fulfillment. And you find, for example, that the Jews who have become Christians, when they're asked, you know, how did you give up everything of Judaism? And whether that was Edith Stein or Cardinal Lustiger of Paris or Monsignor Osterreicher of Seton Hall, all of them say, I never gave up anything. Everything in my Jewish experience is still a part of me. It's significant that a Jew can celebrate every single Jewish liturgical feast as a Christian, because it's all brought to fulfillment. It's not, nothing is abolished. Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, I have not come to abolish the law, but to bring it to fulfillment. And here we find how he takes Old Testament teachings and puts just a little different spin on them. But he does it in a very Jewish rabbinical way. So you have these six antitheses. You have heard it said, but I say to you. So he says, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. I say, don't even look at a woman lustfully. You've heard it said, do not commit murder. I say, do not even get angry with your brother. And what is he doing? This rabbinical technique he's using is called building a wall around Torah. There's an absolute, no adultery, no murder. But how do you ensure that that absolute never occurs? By doing something protective of it. So don't get angry, therefore you'll never, never get close to murdering. Don't commit adultery, but how? Don't even have impure thoughts. And so the entire Sermon on the Mount is a building on the wisdom of the Old Covenant, and it's a bringing it to fulfillment in and through Christ. And interestingly enough, Jesus doesn't simply give us good advice. We can see the gospel message lived in and through him. And one can realize, of course, that if he taught one thing and did another, this would have been one of the first points his enemies would have used against him. But we never find the enemies of Jesus, whether they're the Romans or the Jewish religious authorities or anybody else. No one ever says he said one thing and did another. And in the Old Covenant, the laws that were given, the Jews could rightly say to God, well, yeah, this is an awful lot, 613 laws. You don't know what it's like to try to live this. But in the New Covenant, we can't say that, because Jesus can come back and say, I do know what it's like. I lived it. And as a matter of fact, my very life is the example for it.
Father Peter Stravinskas is founder of the Priestly Society of Cardinal John Henry Newman and is editor of The Catholic Response.